So it was in danger of spending a disproportionate amount of time on this topic, because I want to stick to focusing on topics that are going to be practically relevant to people going into medicine and other healthcare professions. So in order to facilitate that we stick to that, we get to make sure that we get to more of the essential topics. There are five handouts for this topic. I'm going to attempt to do all of them today and focus on the essential parts of it. So you should have a total of five handouts that relate to this topic. They're numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
We have through.
You should have, right? But you really, ultimately you should have. I know you don't. What in real life? You probably have 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Okay. Does anyone need handouts 2 or 3?
I'm not at 3.
1 I don't have, but I do have 2 and 3s. Who needs 2 and 3? Come on up. You need
3. I need 3.
Let's put off the ring.
It's 2. Everybody's here, she's talking to us. Alright. So here we go, we're gonna. And ultimately cadaver organ donation. Those are the three contemporary topics that are going to be dealt with through these handouts. First thing we discussed in handout number 1, just to review quickly, is basically that what's encompassed in these topics is really three potential halachic problems. The first one is Kura, the Isser Losalin. Right, that's number 1. Number 2, Divo Ames Mamish, right, which we're going to focus on in a moment. And the third, the Isser Hana. Right, Isser Hana really comes into play most significantly with organ donation, but even with anatomy lab, it is relevant because there's a whole discussion. The medical information derived from a dead body is a form of Hana, even though it will be argued. Some will say that's not Hana, and others will say that is Hana. We'll see how that works out.
Can you just repeat those three in English?
Sure. So, there is an obligation of burial that is going to be problematic if you start using parts of the body or working with the body and delaying burial. There is an issur to, in any way, do something disrespectful to the body, starting with, let's say, and this has a lot to do with forensic medicine, taking the body that's buried already and removing it from its place of burial, that itself is the first reading of Nivol Hades. But then going into Mamish, cutting up the body, and all those type of activities would be a problem of Nivol Hades, which is desecrating the body. And the third is there is a prohibition of any benefit, any hana from the dead body. So we focused really on the Kfura element last time. And that's what handout number 1 is about. Handout number 1 is about, page 1 is all the relevant issues that are touched upon. Then we see the Isser D'Oraisa on page 2, Losalin and the Chiyuv Kfura. And the Mishnah in Sanhedrin ultimately expands that Isser, that Chiyuv Kfura, beyond what the topic of the Pasuk is, which is an executed criminal. right? To include all Mason. That there is, according to Rove, we show in a Issur d'Oraisa, or an Achiyuv d'Oraisa, to bury a mace. And we discussed a little bit, which is very relevant practically, as to why is there a Achiyuv Kvura? Is it because of, what are the two possibilities? But why there's a Achiyuv Kvura? So let me tell you. It's either Bizayon, Kava Bizayon, or, what's the other possibility? Kapar, right? Basically, expiation. The reason we bury a person is that's part of the process of having expiation for sins and hopefully removing punishments. And at the end, we see it's a machlokus in the Gemara what the primary reason is. Is it kafara? Is it bizayon? Who cares? Why is it important to know what the primary issue is? So, I mean, what's the nafkamina between whether the reason for burial is kapara or bizayon? What's the nafkamina? Why should that make a difference? And it's very, very important at the end of the day. Right? Somebody tell me? Right, let's say if the primary reason is kapara and bizayon is not really an issue. Right? So, can somebody opt out of kapara?
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? You don't want kapara? You don't have to have kapara. You have to have your head examined as to why you wouldn't want kapara. But let's say you don't believe in it, for example, as unfortunately many people do. So they'll have no hesitation to opt out of getting kapara, right? Which they're going to be, let's say, ridiculing or whatever. So if that person, let's say, wills his body to science and says, you know, I don't want kapara, I want to help mankind, I'm a humanist, right? So, I'll be dead. What's the status of that? Are we allowed to accept that from that person? Well, if bizayon is an issue, then it's much more problematic. Because it's not your bizayon we're worried about. It's the bizayon of either the family, and then the Ramban in Teres Adam expands it out to all of Klai Yisrael. It's bizayon for all of us. And that's the maskar, halacha. We see in the Shulchan Aruch that we pass it, a person can't just opt out of this. And the fact that people are willing their bodies to science doesn't help us at all. Right? That's kind of where we left off.
He said that it's not just by the whole man.
Certainly, all of the halachic among people see it as bizayon. And we're affected. So, we're making the decision. In other words, can I let this body go and bury it? Because he said so? No, it's bizayon to me. No matter what the rest of the world, it's still bizayon to me making this decision. And I have to decide whether I'm going to be involved in facilitating this bizayon. I won't. Halachically, you can't. So, it doesn't matter that there's millions of atheists out there that are very happy. By the way, I don't think there's really millions of atheists out there. And I, when you look at the polls on this issue, that's not the way it comes out. But let's not get into it. I said to myself, no tangents today, straight through, we'll find handouts. So that's handout number one. Any questions on handout number one? No. Handout number two. Here's where it gets a little interesting. I'll give you a Gemara. We're going to make this easy for all those with a phobia of Gemaras, which there seems to be a Gemara phobia in this class. Alright, I wanted to use a visual aids for this. But I don't want to waste my time erasing. So I'm going to describe this Gemara outside first. The following case. What we're talking now about the issue of Nimel HaMes, right? Because we've decided now burial is a potential problem, but the Kavod HaMes, for that reason, I am allowed to delay burial. And there are those that will argue if the, you know, to help mankind, to help medicine, that could be a big kavod to the mace, right? Maybe that type of reasoning will allow me to not be that concerned with the kfura issue. But what about nivel mace mamish? You know, in an autopsy, it's, did anyone ever see an autopsy? Not yet, but anyone who goes into pathology certainly will, and in medical school, you certainly will. Right? Anatomy lab is one big ugly autopsy. Ugly because it's being done unprofessionally by you guys, and by me. So what happens there is a tremendous desire to the mace and involves Mamish, cut it off the mace. What is there any exception that we would allow for that type of bizayon to take place? Is there any solid, good reason that halachically would be mutter? Right? So, pikuach nefesh, of course, right? Mamish pikuach nefesh, with a cholah right there who's going to benefit. You could do anything almost, right? Any isser is put aside. But mamish, cholah lefaneinu, sakana lefaneinu, pikuach nefesh. Right? But what about short of that? What about the noble purpose of helping medicine, of acquiring more medical information, teaching medical students? Is that a good enough reason, maybe, to allow for nevomis? So there's two sukkahs in the Gemara that actually discuss this possibility, not about medical education, but other areas that we could possibly extrapolate from and derive a conclusion. So these two Gemaras are going to spend at least a little extra time. First Gemara is Gemara in Baba Basra. Who's learning Baba Basra? Some people here are learning Baba Basra, right? Okay, did you get up to Kuf Nun Dalet yet?
No.
No, okay. So, there is a sugya that you get to Kuf Nun Dalet that describes the following situation. A individual passed away. He had a single son as a Yorish, one inheritor, right? His son inherited everything. The son went, well, let's make it simple. He inherited everything, it was a field. He inherited this field from his father. And the son went and sold it. Some kind of family problem, the son dies shortly after that, right? The other family members, the other Yorshim that are left, now come in and they say, that field should belong to us. Why? Because the son, when he sold it, was a katan. He was below the age of bar mitzvah, therefore it's invalid for him to be selling anything. Therefore, we get the Yerusha from the original man who died. So the Gemara discusses now, who gets it? The people that bought it from the son are saying the son was a gadol, he was bar mitzvah already, right? And they're saying, no, he was a katan. So who wins? Who gets the field? Right? That's the issue at stake. So let's do the Gemara together. Okay?
The question is if it was a katan or if it wasn't? Or
right. If he's a katan, if he's a katan, right, then that sale was invalid. Katan can't sell. Right? And the Yerusha goes to the next in line, which is the Mishpacha.
Who said it was a gadol?
Huh?
Who said it was
buyer.
A gadol?
Well, the buyers, right, are going to say he was a gadol because they want the sale to have been valid. If the sale was valid, the buyers get it. The kuchos, right? So it's the mishpacha, the family who want to say he was a katan, therefore his sale was invalid, and we should get everything. And the kuchos, the people that bought it from him, said, no, he was a gadol, we should get it, the sale was down. Right? That's the tension. So watch the way the Gemara analyzes this, and then let's see what we conclude in terms of our issue of nivlanes. So it's on page 1 of handout number 2. On the bottom, do I have it marked off in any way? Yes. See that little bracket, semi-bracket on the bottom? Eisvei Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan asked Reish Lakish the following question. Maaseh b'bnei Brak. The following occurred in Bnei Brak. The only reason Bnei Brak is significant here because who was the Rav of Bnei Brak?
Famous.
Rabbi Akiva. He's going to get into it, okay? Be'echad shemachar b'nichsei avi umes. There was this person, this katan or gadol, that sold the nechasim of his father, and then he himself died. Ubal b'nei mishpacha, and the family came. Ve'iruru lomar katan b'shas misa. He was a katan. They came and they said he was just a little boy. His sale meant nothing. We should get all the nechasim. Ubal b'shalos Rabbi Akiva. So they came to Rabbi Akiva, the Mara, the Asra, and they said, what should we do? Ma'u labodek. Maybe we can solve this whole dilemma. Let's just check. Let's check out the mace and see what he was or is, right? Is he a gadol or a katan? So what's the potential problem with that?
I'm there.
Well, how would you tell? What are the signs of being a gadol? Does he have shnei saros? Does he have, has he hit puberty? We're going to look. Right? Problem with that is,
what?
Okay. Let's assume he's married for the moment. We don't know if he's married yet, right? The Gemara didn't say so. The The general assumption is, let's start with he's buried, right? He's buried, right? We're going to go and we're going to take him out. This is all a terrible deal on this. It's a desecration of the dead. But we'll check to see if he's a gadol or a katan. So they asked Rabbi Akiva, is that okay? What's the gain here? What's the noble purpose of doing this?
Money.
Okay, so let's see what happens. So what does he say? Amar lehem, ye atem rishayim lezavla. You are not allowed to desecrate him for that purpose. Ve'od, and here's where things get complicated. And not only that, because one has to wonder, why do you need anything else? Right? That should be it. That should be the psak. You cannot do it. But he says, not only that, simanim asuyin lihishtanos la'achar misa. Guess what? It wouldn't even help to go check. Because it's possible that he died as a katan, but he's going to look like he was a gadol after misa. Right? Now, do we want to get into the medical facts on that? Do we?
Yeah.
Oh, you did not. We showed him here, discuss it. It's very interesting. What are we talking about? What is that? How does that happen? So there's various opinions. I think that the medical reality is that it could happen that way. The hair can continue to grow a little. And the question is, what are the halachic simanim really are? So you'll see, if you look in the Hagosa Bach over here, he says that in order to be a seir that's considered a gadol, it has to be able to fold over itself. So it's possible that it was very, very small, not large enough to make this type of halachic maneuver to prove godless, and that occurs achar misa b'keren. Right, so that's one possibility. That would be a biologically accurate statement of the Bach. Others, the Tosfos over here, the Ode, give other ideas. Maybe it was white sayar, and it turned dark, which they're intimating is a simon, which the other of the Achronim say, where did that simon come from? Who said that's a simon of godless, that it's dark versus light? So that seems to be a machlokes over there. And then there's a third opinion that has to do with gumos that are left, holes that are left, that would indicate, I guess, a maturation of the hair follicle there.
Can you say also that the body deteriorated so much that, I mean, depending on the time span, the body deteriorated so much that you can't really tell anymore?
Right, so hold on that, because from the perspective we're looking at it now, who is it that wants to check, according to the way we're learning tomorrow right now? Who wants to check?
Members.
Who's asking to check?
Family members, no?
No. You have to, I should have made that clear. If you look at the way Rashi learns the Gemara right now, what's happening is one person is considered the muchzak, right? And everyone knows what that expression means?
Yeah.
When it comes to ownership of property, right? We say hamotzi mecharei l'baraya, which means that one person is considered the one who's currently in possession, right? And we're talking about movable objects, metaltalin, and anyone else who wants to take it away, they have to bring the proof. So in this case, to begin with, we're assuming that the family are the ones holding on to things, right? The one who's coming in and complaining and asking to check is the lukuchos, the potential buyers, right? Because they're the ones that want to prove he was a gadol. The family says, we have it, we're keeping it, we maintain he was a katan. Who's coming in to challenge that? The buyers, they're saying, what are you talking about? He was a gadol. We won. They said, prove he was a gadol. They said, okay, let's go to Rabbi Akiva. Right? These are the lukuchos. Right? Let's go to Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva, what should we do? We want to check it out. We want to prove he's a gadol. So he says to them, number one, you're not allowed to be menachem. And number two, even if you would, you can't prove he's a gadol because he could have become a gadol achar misa. Right? Everyone following?
Why do they want to imply that they had it? Because they're the ones being arava against them.
Right, but because of the last line, because we're saying at this point, Pashat Shat in the line that says, the next line, the Ode. Right? The Ode, Simani Masu, Yishtanis Lachamisa, the Pashat Shat is that the way they will be Yishtanis is that they will look like a gadol.
That's
even though they were cut
at the
time.
And that's for the...
And that's a response to the
buyer. Okay.
Right, exactly. So that's why push-up shot is that way now. Don't get... That's why I wanted to write this in the picture. Make it easier. I find majority of people... When things seem auditory complicated, visually become simple. Does anyone have a thing I can remember?
a certain biological measure or test that they can run on the body that can decide what age it was and if
at the time of death?
If that person has puberty.
Nowadays we can do that.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
But back then.
Right, so I'm saying nowadays.
Right, but this is, we're not worried about this type of problem right now. In other words, our issue isn't can we tell this type of DNA on this issue is my name. What we want to derive from this Gemara is when is there a valid reason to allow the illness? So that's why we have to use their time and whatever the science of their time.
No, I understand. But I'm saying that the logic of Rabbi Akiva, which is that Wala Simanim won't exist anymore.
To the best of their abilities back at that
right,
time,
right.
There was no way to tell.
I'm saying nowadays, that's what he said. Who's looking at the Gemara nowadays?
Well, so, yeah, I'm sure that there's a forensic way, there's a pathologic way to tell at the time of death, you know, through other means, what the, I don't know if the computer, it might be some question. You know, if
like
it's...
You check in terms of blood what types of hormones are flowing around.
Right.
Elevated level of testosterone or whatever.
If you were lucky enough at the time of death to get a sample, right, it depends on how much time has elapsed.
It seems to be that shot's the other way around. It would make more sense that the body would look younger once it's married as opposed to older.
Really?
Like you had like a few berries now, they are off because of the whole burial process.
Wait, say that again? Oh, you mean like that might happen?
That makes a lot more sense.
Well, it's interesting because Mars is going to flip shot in the middle. But is everyone following? Because I get a few blank faces, and I know that if I drew this picture, it would become very simple. Very quick.
Look into the drawer, and that's what
I'm
like.
I feel like, you know,
oh, I haven't actually.
This happens in the team.
Oh,
I figured it would be you. Is it irreducible?
Yeah.
Okay. I want to
know.
All right, let's go over the case. Because we're about to flip the whole case. The Gemara's going to do the opposite in a second. But what's going on over here? We have this, we just drew a stick. Poor little guy. Poor big guy. I don't know what he is. So here we are. And we have on one hand, let's call family versus the kuchos. These are the buyers. So he had the nechasa, right? What happened? He, before he died, sold the nechasa to these guys, right? And then he died. Right now, we're assuming that the nechasim are in the possession of the family. He never got a chance to give them to the buyers. Physically, they're in the possession of the family. Come along the buyers with a shtar, right? If you really get into this Gemara, the Gemara is really about a different halakha, so I'm not going to confuse you, right? It has something to do with shtaros, it's a whole issue if you're learning about the basra. But they have good proof that the sale took place, right? They said, these nechasim that you're holding really belonged to us. He sold it right before he died. So the family says, he's a katan. No, he's a gadol. Right? What are we going to do? So the family says, we're holding on to this. We're not letting go until you prove he was a gadol. What's their only recourse? Can they prove he's a gadol? Did they have the testosterone levels before his demise? No. Their only choice is, right? This symbolizes nivul hames, right? Is Mahu the Bodka. They want to be Bodik. They want to be Bodik him to see, can we prove from looking at him that he's a god? So Rabbi Akiva says two answers. Answer number one is Aser. You can't be Manav. Implication being, right off the bat, you can't be Manav for that type of purpose. And number two, the simanim will change. Everyone knows the shorthand for change, right? If you go into medicine, you have to know that. Simanim change after death, achamis.
Is that two different responses or one response with?
He gave two answers. He responded to twice. He said, Aser unavlo, the ode. Simanim Asuyan Vishnapas.
They're not saying it's us because of Simanim.
No, two separate answers. So that right away is a difficult. That's one difficulty. Does everyone understand this Vishnapas? Right, got it?
Good picture, my good.
I'm not sure.
Why should prove that he's cousin? Why should they prove? Why can Mishpacha prove that he's a cousin? I mean, like, why are the Klukos?
Well, Mishpacha would want to prove that he's a cousin.
No, so why is that on the Klukos?
Because of possession, in other words.
But yeah,
according to this, they're the Muxa.
They have the Shtar, though.
Right, but so then you're getting into the
Sukkah
and the Gemara, but the assumption is, right, that's the point that the point you're making is the next few lines in the Gemara, which we're going to skip. Because the Gemara says, oh, it's a raya that what counts is possession. And most of the line, most of Chavir, I love a raya, and it's even overriding the Shtar. That's the first point, but I don't want to bring that into this. You don't need that for what we need. But it's good conscience, exactly what the Gemara said. But don't worry about it. And anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it. Unless you want to really learn your more right, which would be nice. But we'll put that sugya aside. Right now, we can just assume whoever has possession is the winner, right? So they have possession, according to this approach, right? That's the assumption. Since they have possession, that puts the onus on them. The onus is on them. Their only recourse would be to check. But they were just told they can't do it. So the Gemara then asked that question that you just asked. So then the Gemara says, a response for the side that wants to say the shtar does count, right? Says, you're learning the Gemara all wrong. Now the Gemara is going to give a whole different understanding of what happened. Right? So now when it flips and changes, isn't the family in possession, but in truth, the buyers have gotten possession. Okay? So and they have the money. So, let's first do it over here. So what's going to happen now? Now, the family's going to come and say, hey, wait a second. He was a katan, what are you doing? Give us that. And they say, no, we're not giving it up. So they got to prove it. So what do they have to do? What are they going to do?
Prove that up.
Well, this is a much different case now. You don't have the concept of shtars.
Now they gotta do this. They gotta go to Rabbi Akiva. And they say, can we check? Right? And Rabbi Akiva gives the same answer. So take a look at the Gemara. Let's do it inside and see what the Gemara does with this. If you go to the second page in Handa, skip down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. Do you really think that the money, the valuables are in the hands of the family? And it's the buyers that are coming and complaining and wanting to check? No, that's not the way it was. What makes much more sense, the Gemara says now, is the opposite, like that. The property, the money, is in possession of the buyers. And now they're coming and they're raising doubt. And now this is the important line. The Gemara says, the Hachinami Mistabra, this makes so much more sense. Why does this make more sense? Because now we can understand Rabbi Akiva's response. Because listen to what Rabbi Akiva was saying. He says, number one, he says to the family, Asur, it is Asur for you to be monic. You cannot be monavel. You, as the family, can't be monavel the mace. However, right? And therefore we can understand why there'd be no reaction to that. The ishtiki. Iyamar bishleh bin mishpacha kahamare mishum hachi ishtiku. Iliyamar kukos kamare amai shatku leymarle. I'm purposely reading this very fast. Anadzuzi avina leymarle. Basically, the Gemara says like this. There's only one party, it seems, that would ever accept Rabbi Akiva saying to them, Buster, you're not allowed to be monopoly the mace for this purpose. That's the family. Because if it was the buyers who are going to lose out on money, they would be allowed to say, I don't care about Nivel on this. He owes me money.
Does that mean they would have been allowed to actually...
The implication of Pashup Shah and Niskabah. is that money becomes a valid reason to be the nominal lease. To get back money that's owed to you, not to make money, right? But not to lose money, right? They're allowed to say, I don't care about nominal lease. He owes me money. But then there's a response, right? And the response is, no. We're gonna say this could work.
Could not?
It could still work. We just don't have a question on the bottom floors.
How can they do it in Avera? There's a bet in that time, they would prosecute them. They don't care.
No, the implication is they're talking on Pidim. In other words,
but he says usher. If it's usher for the family,
it's usher for the family.
And it's usher for them.
No, that's what the Gemara now is implying, right? That was a previously false assumption. That the usher really is only on family members. Why would it be more on family members than others? Because the chiyuv kvura is essentially most on the family, right? They're the first one. When there's a mace, who bears first primary responsibility for the mace? The closest relatives. And then it goes out and out until it's a mace mitzvah. Ultimately, we're all responsible. Primary responsibility is always the family. So according to that mahalach, that's what seems to be going on in the Gemara, that we're saying in line with that, so the family for money, they can't be monopoly. But it sounds like from this reading of the Gemara so far that anyone else can.
We're saying originally the reason why Kavira is needed is because we see that when Beth Town set one up, they have Sky, they can leave now overnight because they've all messed. Now, what Vedic said, we've got the burning camp, so we have Beth is burning camp, so Beth is hung them up, Beth is taking them down because they're the ones that are splitting them. So, from there, we don't see that Mishpapa is the one that needs to bury him. And in addition to that, just because Mishpapa needs to bury him, the issue of Nebula Mess is not limited
to the other. There's other studies. Learn the primary responsibility of the family.
Yeah, but that could be, but that still doesn't mean that Nibble MS is not negating anybody else.
Good. Yeah, well, right now that's the implication of this Gemara. Right now that's the implication.
Based on what the Gemara is saying.
Based on the fact that the Gemara is saying to them it makes much more sense that the scenario must have been this as opposed to that.
Why?
Because we can only understand this as a valid response of Rabbi Akiva if it's in the context of speaking to the Mishpacha. But he could never have gotten away with this psak to legitimate Lekuchos that want to get their money back.
And the Mishpacha wants to get their money back? Yeah, if it has to be, it could be disregarded. It's
right.
Regardless.
So despite the fact that they have an issue of money, but they're Mishpacha, so they have an additional level of chiyuv. That's the implication.
Is the implication that Rabbi Akiva couldn't have gotten away with that psak, or that the mishpacha would be more likely to accept that? Like, that's the psak either way, but because the mishpacha would take a step back and realize that,
right,
wow,
right,
this is our family member.
Right. No, the point that's being made is by the Gemara. Like, if this would have been a Rishon speaking, or me speaking, and analyzing the Gemara, then you have a valid point. We can start to play with the psak. But this is the Gemara itself.
The implication is that what Rabbi Akiva says only makes sense if he's talking to what's it called, the mishpacha.
That's what I thought when I heard.
That's
that.
Yours.
So
you're saying it only makes what Rabbi Akiva says only makes sense when he's talking to the mishpacha.
Right. That's what the Gemara is saying. Right. Exactly. That only the implication being that in an objective sense, the concern about losing your money is a valid reason to monopoly a mace as long as it's not your family member. But if it is your family member, then even that is not valid enough. But that is a big ramification of this. If loss of money is a good enough reason to allow non-relatives to be monopoly a mace, right? So certainly helping medical science should be, or figuring out more information about diseases is as good as money, right? I hope everybody agrees. Right? So, without, we can go through the Gemara. I don't want to spend too much time on it because I'm breaking my rule. But the ultimate conclusion, according to many in the Farshim, is along the lines of what I'm saying. In fact, let's say you know the Yehuda, very famous. The one who's got the most famous tshuva, and you'll find it in this handout. And I'm going to talk outside the handout now a lot. We're going to just take a free analysis of this entire issue. If you look in the handout, you'll see anyone who's interested in seeing the Makaros. So you'll see on the last two pages, on page 3 and on page 4, sections from Novi Yehuda that are going to be referring, I'm going to be referring to now. He learned Pshat, this is Gemara, this way. He was asked, the Novi Yehuda was asked about an issue of autopsy. It is the most famous tshuva about autopsy that exists. Novi Yehuda. And he said, he looked at the studio, and what?
Was they marking the bodies out for a long period of time?
Well, the issue by the Novi Yehuda was, it sounds like something either gallstones or kidney stones or something like that. And they wanted to, there was a whole argument between two people, are we allowed for the purpose of understanding what killed this person? Somebody died of some type of medical, you know, issue that they tried some kind of treatment that didn't work. Can we now do an autopsy to figure out maybe we'll help somebody in the future? Right? That was the shot. And he said, you're not allowed to be monogamous. So one of the shohel brought up this sugya. He says, don't you see from this sugya that for a good reason, even money, we're allowed to be monogamous? Can't we say that for the good reason of increasing, expanding our medical knowledge and possibly helping people in the future, isn't that a good enough reason also? It's got to be at least as good as the money. So the Novi Yehuda really accepts it. You see that he learned pshat in this sugya the way I presented it to you. That ultimately the Gemara is accepting the fact that it's a valid response for the non-family members to say, the way the quote is, right? The way they put it, you have to appreciate the Aramaic. Right? It says, "Anan zuzia binale linvo belinvo." We're going to lose money. Just be manavo. It doesn't matter. It is a valid response. That's a valid response. And the other view that says, "Yeah, it would have been," he says, but the reason that won't allow us to do autopsies, he says, is because every autopsy needs the consent of the family members. And ultimately, the family members were held, even by this Gemara, to a higher standard. And there is no valid hepter for the family members to allow the Milames. But what's hidden inside this note of Yehuda is an acceptance of the concept, in theory, that non-family members could. For reasons like loss of money. Everyone follow that? To me, it's an earth-shattering thing. Especially when you read what we're going to talk about next, which is the Egros Moshe. When Moshe Feinstein rejects this completely. He says, you're missing the whole point of the Gemara. He says, same to the Novi Yehuda, you're not learning the Gemara right. And Moshe Feinstein learned the Gemara very differently. Something along the lines of, I think somebody here said something that really touched upon. I'll tell you in a second.
Sorry, I just don't understand something. Because I mean, Rashi says on Kadesha Lo Limbo Proba, he says, on Hamid Dishab, he says Kadesha Lo Limbo Proba. So he says, the like we were saying before, that the reason that they were silent, not because necessarily there's a law, that because they're a family member, they're brought to a higher standard, but just because if they're a family member, so they feel bad, they don't want to be manado their own son or their own brother. So that therefore they're going to listen to Rabbi Kiva's, they're going to listen to Rabbi Kiva's daughter, whereas the Kuklos are going to be like, we want our money, we don't care about this mix.
But who cares? Because, I mean, in other words, Rabbi Kiva's not going to change his sound because they're going to say that.
Right, exactly.
The way the flow of the Gemara is that he would. The flow of the Gemara is we have to reject that he's talking to them because he's going to have to back out because they have a valid response. I hear what you're saying. Again, if it wouldn't have been the Gemara saying all this, we could have touched out the original Gemara that way. But the Gemara is doing the work for us. The Gemara is itself telling me, you're right. This has to be that the Muhsak was really all along with the Gemara, and that he's talking to them. Because this response would not have been tenable to the Gemara. That's definitely the Gemara's...
So basically it can't be that the family... There's no chance for if there was a case that that was a... No, limbo, limbo for our son.
That's right. Because according to what you're saying, this is a sick exception. Right? So they could have done that, right? But no.
Okay.
According to this pshat, according to the Novi Yehuda's pshat, there's this chiluk, right? Which means that family members can never be monogamous. It's like a technicality that he uses. It's unbelievable. It's a technicality now to get in the way of every autopsy. Because ultimately, if like American law is also family consent. So the only thing he says, we can always be stuck. You're right. In other words, hinachinami, like distant, non-related people, for these other reasons, can be monogamous. Right? That's a big chiddush. Where Moshe Feinstein says, absolutely not. And this is the more, I think, accepted approach. The halacha is what Moshe Feinstein. Moshe Feinstein says, no. He says, that's not what's going on here at all. What's going on here is the following. That in the end, when the Gemara will learn pshat to be as this scenario, the reason that there's two, Rav Moshe, he says, what's with two reasons? If Rabbi Akiva was just saying, one simple pshat, it's usur for you to be manavel lemes, that should be it. What do I need to say? And by the way, should you do it anyway? What is he just covering his bases in case they don't listen to my pshat? I want them to know it's not going to work anyway. Right? He can't believe it. He says, oh, is Rabbi Akiva changing his mind? Is he in doubt of his pshat? It's very unusual for him to give the second psalm. So he says, "What the way to learn pshat is as follows. Just, I'll make it very simple. He says, the scenarios, they come, and he's talking to the lekuchos. Right? Because the Gemara at the end comes back to that the scenario is that the mishpacha has the money. It is the lekuchos. And I'm going to show you how Rabbi Akiva answers them, and it's going to work just fine. Rabbi Akiva says to them as follows. He says, number one, Aser Lenavla, you cannot be Menavla this mace, despite the fact that you're not related to him. Forget that Hope Shad, it's totally wrong. No one is allowed to be Menavla this mace. Across the board, it's the same Isser on everybody. What type of Nivla mace is that talking about? That's talking about Nivla mace where the body was buried already, and you had to unbury it. Or you're going to actually do something. Mamish physical cutting of the body, or some type of desecration like that. So on that, that's the first answer he says. When it comes to being,
that's only for taking.
If the body's buried already, that's what Moshe learned.
That's only, but he's only talking about that.
Right. What was he getting at with the second one? The reason he gave a second answer is because let's assume the body was not yet buried. If the body's not yet buried, now you could talk about a difference between mishpacha and everybody else. Because the chiyuv of burial, right, based on many sukkim chas, not just every year, right? Brachas, is the third part of Brachas. Mishnah is a mutal afarnu, right? That Mishnah, right? We'll tell you that there's a primary responsibility of the primary relatives for burial. Right? There's other makoros. Take my word for it. It's a primary responsibility of the mishpacha. I don't want to go to all the sukkim of that, right? But it's the beginning of the third part. And he says, when it comes to delaying burial, there is more of a responsibility on the family than on the lekuchos. So these guys have a valid statement here. When it comes to the money, right, they can come forward and say, look, we say he was a gadol, they say he was a katan. We want to hold off burial until we check. So they have a right to do that. And they have one up. They have an advantage over the family. Because the family couldn't do that. They couldn't even delay burial for money. So Rav Moshe sees there is enough community between family and everyone else. The guy with what we'll call nivil kav, like a very low level of nivil. A low level desecration is a delay of burial. So for delaying burial, that he'll make the chiluk, and that was why we needed this other response. He's saying to them, even though you would be able to delay the burial, and you have that advantage, it won't do you any good. Why? Because, simanim, asui mishnah nasachar misa. That's why he needed to say that. Okay, so the first was his psak, amnibal ameis manch. You're not allowed, no one's allowed even on this, for the reason of money. Money's never a good reason, right? So Moshe will reject completely the idea as a bottom line that you could ever do nivel ames, mamish, for the purpose of anything other than mamish sakadas nefashos and chovel lefaneh. But any other reason, medical education, money, forget it. You will never be allowed to do, even take exhume a body, right? You just can't. You'll never learn that from the sun. Everyone hear it? And that is the accepted general approach.
What was another because? What was another Yehuda's approach here?
The Nodi Yehuda was like using technicalities. He said, he also asked him that they couldn't do the autopsy, right? But for two other reasons. One, he said, the reason he came to the autopsy is because even though he agrees with this chiddush that non-relatives could be menachem base for these other purposes, he says, but the family never could. And in order to allow an autopsy, even in their time, he needed the family's consent. So technically, it can never happen. The family will always be unable to say yes. And he also said, what was the other thing we did in the first year? The other thing, this was another view that we spoke about at the very beginning, in terms of learning to learn a mitzvah to become a doctor. So he says that also. He says that you can't, the likelihood of medical information here saving your life, medical education here saving your life, is so small that you can't use pikuach nefesh to allow it. And Rav Moshe said that even if the likelihood were greater, let's say in contemporary times, we can get information from autopsies that you can make an argument, have a fairly good chance of maybe helping somebody, right? That's the kind of argument, get ready. If you're going to be someone who refuses to participate in asking a patient to do an autopsy, so you're going to have an argument with somebody one day. I tell you, I've been through this like 10 times. And they're going to say to you, what are you talking about? This is a dead body. Isn't it more important that we get the information to help somebody? And they're going to start telling you how it's very feasible that the information from this particular body will be helpful. Anything short of mamish directly saving a life is awesome. Is us to do. But in the Northern Yehuda's times, it was really very unlikely that they were going to get anything out of their autopsy in that case. So he says, it's such a chashash kal, I would never be matir this autopsy. Comes along Rav Moshe Feinstein, and he says, you know, the Matthias has changed a little. That maybe in the Northern Yehuda's times, it's like 0% has changed that when they start cutting up this poor person that died from the gallstone or whatever it was, we're going to get any useful information. But in our times, you know, we're more sophisticated. We can communicate throughout the world. There'll be some patient somewhere, maybe. He says, there's still not enough. Even that argument will not hold up. He did, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. You need mamish chol lefanim. Okay? Then there's another sugya, which we're going to just touch upon briefly. If you look at the last page of the handout, it's a sugya in chulin. Right? Anyone learn the first part of chulin? Okay, you go for Smicha, you learn Chulin. So the first parak talks about where we learn the idea of Holchin Achar Harov. You go according to the majority. How do we know that din? Somebody tell me. The din in the halacha is Holchin Achar Harov. What's the source of that? Which is? Achar Rabin. Hatos, right? Okay, good. So that's for a Ruba de Isa command, right? That's a road where it's called the fire. Right, so the fact that if I had a judgment with five judges, and three say guilty, and two say innocent, three beats two. The Gemara here discusses, well, how do I know when it's not a quantifiable rule? You know, the majority of men between 11 o'clock and 4 o'clock get sleepy, right? So, how do I know that's true? You can't quantify that. I can't, like, take a poll of all the men in the world. Right? But there's certain things you know that it's true in the majority of people. So where do I see how we did? The Gemara is looking for a source that we followed such majorities, right? Where we can't really quantify it, but we know it's true anyway. It's called the Ruba de Lesa Kama. That's the technical name. So one of the proofs they want to bring is the case over here that I want you to see. And this one's a much shorter, simpler case. The case is, they say, from the fact that we can execute a murderer. How does that happen? Well, if somebody is going to be executed for murder, what must be true? A whole bunch of things, right? It had to be what? Asura. Asura, it had to be a warning before he did it. What?
Aidim.
All those technical things. Good. What had to be true about the victim? What could he not be?
A traitor,
right? Everyone know what that means? He couldn't be somebody who was going to be dying anyway in the next 12 months, let's say. He had some kind of wound or some type of problem internally where he would have died anyway. So the Gemara says, how can we ever execute anybody? How do we know the person that was killed wasn't a traitor? Right? It must be Holchin Acharov. It must be that we really see from the Torah that we follow the majority. So the Gemara says, wait a second. What do you say? That the guy might be traitorous? Let's check him. Cut him open and check. So they say, oh, you can't. It's an Isser Nivel Hames. You know how to do that. Right? So they said, wait a second. But we need to do it to save the life of the murderer. So the Gemara says, well, still no good. Why? Because maybe where this guy got his sword, you know, he died from a sword, right? So where that sword came in, right there, was the spot where he had the wound, where he was a trefa, and we'd miss it. So therefore, it must be halchin achar rov. Rove of the times, the victims don't have any of these trefos, right? And therefore, we will actually execute somebody. Halchin achar rov. That's the end of the Gemara. So what's the implication of this Gemara? Everyone, here they are. What does it imply for us in terms of what was the Gemara willing to do, right?
Kill someone based on the fact that the role...
Well, in terms of nivlamis, right? Forget about
not allowed to save someone else's life.
No, just the opposite, right? Pashut Pshat in this Gemara is...
In
order to save, if it were possible technically, if we didn't have that technical little issue of that, it might be that the very place where the sword went in was the area where the trefa was, we would have said, Enachinam, you're right, for the potential, only the potential of saving the Rotzeach's life, we would allow the Nivlamis, right? Which is not the same as Chov Lefanim, right? Here it's a tremendously unlikely discovery, right? So in order to save the potential executed murderer, the Gemara seems to be allowing us to check. Right? And the only reason that we don't check is because of that one occurrence where the place where we would discover the trefa might be exactly where the sword comes.
So let me just finish this thought.
So people actually, this is a major source for another hector that exists. The other place where many halachic authorities allow autopsies is in forensic medicine. Meaning, like, for the purpose of ascertaining, did this guy really do it or not? That's not really, you know, necessarily mamish saving anyone's life directly. But that's another place you'll see Alpidin, like the Tzitz Eliezer, I think the Rabbanut HaRashi of Eretz Yisrael will allow autopsies in forensic cases, which is good for us here in America because we're really going to have little say in it. Anyway, once the government, once the police are telling you have to do this, demand an autopsy, there's not much you can do to fight it, you can try. That will happen also. You know, there'll be cases like that. Child abuse cases, low and lame, those are the most horrible. But you'll see there will be some times where Abidin, you shouldn't be doing the autopsy, but they will. The government will force you to do it. So, but there are halakhic authorities, and perhaps this is the makor for it, where we see the Gemara's willingness, if it would have not been for the technicality, to allow, for forensic reasons, to save the executioner, to allow an autopsy. So I'm hoping that what you're all asking me is that really necessarily true, that conclusion on the Gemara? Because Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to reject that as well. Is that what you want to say?
John? I'm not sure I understand the case. Who would they be checking this case? The murdered?
They want to check the victim.
Yeah.
Was the victim a traitor?
Oh, if the victim's a traitor.
Right. If he was a traitor, the murder is off the hook.
Oh, okay.
He might be on the British mind. He's still a Rotzeach. Right. However, you can't execute him. Can't be punished with that.
Much of you answered this, but you said just say he was stabbed and that's where the wound was. That's such a small minority of chance. Can't you use the concept of Rav in that? Because 99.9% of the rest of his body is potentially where the wound could be.
And in other words,
so it's
check.
A much, much more majority, therefore check. Because it's,
that's Rav Moshe. Very good, exactly. Excellent. Everyone hear that? That's what Rav Moshe Patterson says. What kind of... He again takes on the note of Yehuda. The note of Yehuda said what I said up till now. Comes along Rav Moshe and he says, what? He says, you learn from this Gemara the opposite, that you can't even be menavel a mace for the purpose of potentially saving an executioner, an executed person who's found guilty of murder. Because otherwise, the Gemara would have surely said, 99.9% of the time, exactly where you put it, excellent. The Gemara would have said, do it. Forget about, oh, maybe it's the point where the sword went in. What about all those other possible trefos, right? So Rav Moshe argues that this is a raya that forensic reasons are not a good reason to do nivlamis. That to save the next person who's found guilty of murder, you can't be nivlamis.
So what's the
shot
in the last
part? Can, I thought. Rav Moshe said you can.
No. The Noda Behuda, the first shot.
He says you can't.
He says that you can.
I don't get it.
Because
I don't. Then I'm not understanding. I thought that the whole thing of the sword is in there. We don't check now because it could have been exactly.
Don't feel that you don't understand because when there's the Gemara like this, that two gigantic gedolim are arguing about pshat like the way they are. Obviously, it's not a simple thing to understand. Right?
No, but
there's a subtle difference between the two of them. I'll say it one more time, and then I want to go forward because I want to get to just the conclusions. I want to really move to this topic is one of my least favorite. This is the case of the Gemara. The Gemara goes like this. The Gemara says, it's trying to learn out an issue of, where do we see in the Torah that majority counts? Right? Where do we see that? So it says, we see it from the fact that we are able to execute murderers. How do we see it from that? Because the Gemara says, why would we ever be allowed to execute a murderer? Isn't it always theoretically possible that the victim was a traitor? Was somebody who, if we knew he was a traitor, that person would not be executed? Because you can only be executed for killing somebody who's known to be a non-traitor. So the Gemara says, well, if the issue is really traitor or not, we should just check. Let's check. Let's cut him open and see if he's a traitor. And then we don't have to rely on the rove, right? Well, no. If he's a traitor from checking, he's off the hook. If he's not, we're not relying on any rove. So the Gemara says, no, you're still relying on the rove. How are we relying on the rove? Because it's possible checking won't do you any good. Why? Because you won't be able to check the place where the sword went into. Let's say the sword went into his heart. I'll make it even more understandable. The sword went right into the guy's heart. Maybe he had a hole in that heart that was there already, and he was a traitor. So I'll never know. Right? So therefore, we're certainly to some degree relying on the rove in executing this guy. Because we can never know for certain. So the question is now, the battle between the Noda Yehuda and Ramosha. So what's the implication of this Gemara? What's the Gemara telling me about Nivel Ames? Was the Gemara telling me that really, you know what, for the purpose of saving that guy, you're allowed to be Menavel Ames? And the only reason we don't do it is because it's not foolproof. Because there'll be one scenario where it won't work. That seems to be the way the Noda Yehuda is learning the Sugya, which would lead you to the conclusion that really you can, for the purpose of potentially saving an executioner, an executed murderer, you're allowed to desecrate the body. Get whatever information you can. That's the Noda Yehuda's conclusion.
In
other words, check where you can check. It's true, I won't get it 100%, but check where you can. So he thinks that's what's underlying this Gemara, that type of reasoning. And Ramosha says, no, the Gemara is really telling you we don't check. Right? Look at the elect. When we execute criminals, do we check? We don't check. So what does Ramosha say? This Gemara is teaching me you're not allowed to check. Even for the quote-unquote noble purpose of potentially saving a person who's chayav nisa, you're not allowed to desecrate that body. And why not? Right? You should ask, isn't it pikuach nefesh? Right? Ramosha has to deal with that. And it's a form of pikuach nefesh. Maybe here's a guy, he's going to be executed. If I desecrate this body, I'll save him. So he says, well, it's an incredible thing what Moshe says here. He says that we don't worry about pikuach nefesh for a gavra ketila, which is a person who is considered dead. Someone who has been found guilty of murder and is to be executed, v'chai bahem, which is the whole p'tur, allowing pikuach nefesh to be doche isurim, doesn't apply. Right? It's an incredible statement.
How does
Ramosha learn the body? Is that why you say you
can't? Is that why you say that's why Ramosha will
say you can't check
that you cannot check. He says you cannot check. But his reading of the Gemara, he says, this Gemara is telling me, I would have thought maybe you can check. But the Gemara is clearly, the upshot of this Gemara is, you can't. Because if you could, you would have at least tried a little bit. You would have tried to get the 99% of traitors that weren't where the sword went in. But since the Gemara doesn't allow that, and we don't do that, we don't check, and we rely on the rove, and Moshe says, you see from here, that it's not a good enough reason, even that, to not desecrate a body. I don't think, and this, you have to feel this out with the Rabbanim, I don't think that this psak of Moshe is the accepted psak. I think it's more accepted the other way, in terms of forensic purposes. That if you could potentially get a murderer off the hook, I think there'll be more post-game, probably there'll be Mekel than Machmir on that issue. In terms of the first issue, he said, Rav Moshe's approach is the accepted one, that across the board, family or non-family members cannot be menahem lo-meis for small reasons like money and things like that.
So, according to Rav Moshe, I mean, I'm not exactly sure how this works halachically, but I thought there's a principle that you're supposed to do whatever you can to free someone from prison. So, how does the fact that he's been found guilty in a non-Jewish court basically sort of counteract that requirement to free someone from prison?
This was not a non-Jewish court. I mean, this is all... Well, it's all within Beis Din.
We also
a non-Jewish court is a whole other ballgame in terms of what the validity of that a person who's going to be executed. I mean, in contemporary terms, right? So that's a good point. That's a good point.
According to Moshe, I'm assuming he's talking about contemporary times.
Right, he is. That's an excellent point.
But according to Moshe, also wouldn't make enough mean if he's been convicted already. Like, if it's still in progress and has been no judgment rendered yet, then would you be able to? Because that's getting him off, essentially.
Right.
As opposed to...
He would not be a
Gavartil yet, right, until the...
I have to say that's Sokhan's Nefasho, so that it would be Doch. Right, exactly.
In that case, okay.
I mean, it's true, but he's talking about somebody that was already...
Already convicted.
Absolutely found, but I think your point is excellent. In the Tshuva, he doesn't make reference to that point, but I think it would have to be contended, and it might change everything completely. Right.
Well, that's part of the argument that says that it's possible that the sword went into the part that was changed. How does Mershon
know
that? If Mershon's saying that you can't do
that,
regardless of that,
how does he know? In other words, how does he know? So he says, but the first point is that the whole agenda of the Gemara was to find out, can we learn from here that we go according to the law, right? That was the agenda of the Gemara, right?
My question is...
Let me see, I'm going to answer your question, right? But you have to understand that, because you'll understand the flow of the
Gemara.
That was the agenda. So the Gemara says, okay, let's see. Do we really, the fact that we execute criminals, does that prove that we go to the road? No, because maybe what we're supposed to do is only execute them after we do the check. So Nora says, no, that wouldn't be good enough. Because it's technically flawed in the fact that you can miss. And that's what that means, that line. Yeah. In other words, we must be going to the road. Now the question is, does that imply that, but you know, in fact, we've got to check, like they don't do the sense. We will check as much as we can. It won't be foolproof, and that little non-foolproof part, okay, I'll take another one. Or Moshe says, what the Gemara is telling me is a bigger chiddush. The Gemara is telling me, once they concluded that you can't check 100%, now you can't check it all. Right? That's his chiddush. That's what he has said tomorrow, which is a bigger, much bigger chiddush, much more difficult than the other news.
So in other words, if for whatever reason we know that there's no technical problems that we know that if we check.
Yeah, I can think of that. I can think of many. Right.
But even if he did murder the person.
Let's say it's drowning. Something like that. I mean, the drowning might not be so. Some type of asphyxia where we're covering all the traces. It definitely can come up with poison. I don't know.
Basically, so even if we know the person killed him, and we know the person tried to kill him,
right. So according to the majority of Shabbat, you can check. You can check and make sure it wasn't a trick.
So according to Moshe, can I check up?
According to Moshe, no.
He's
saying the whole Shabbat of this Gemara is that you're not allowed to check to save money.
So if that's the case, then
of course, he might be different in a non-Jewish world.
No, but if that's the case, the Gemara would not say that's irrelevant where the sword is. The Gemara would say, no, we don't do it because we don't try to save a murderer.
You're saying it's really difficult in the Moshe's check.
Yes. So how does the Moshe learn the last part?
No, as you're saying, because the Gemara's case is talking about a case where the guy's stabbed with the sword.
No.
So that's what they're dealing with.
No, what I'm saying is that the Gemara says the reason why we don't do it is because it's possible that however
many
use, but it's possible that
Tosfos actually asks, what about other types of death? Where would it be that great? And the way they seem to answer it, the way they seem to handle it is that there would be other problems of trichos and other types of death that would be analogous to the spot of the knife. The implication being, it's not a short answer, the implication being that however the death occurred, whatever that cause was, would have interfered with a thorough cleaning.
That
I don't think it's true. I mean, I actually don't think
it's true.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So
I agree with
that. How would you say? So, what did you say?
I know what you said. I think it's difficult for sheep.
Maybe you just wouldn't take that just literally. You would just say it's clear that the
Yamsha,
Gemara.
Alright, so we need to come close to what I want to do. But here's what we're going to do. At the end of the day, if you look as a bottom line, in terms of Nibble and Mace, once we're through with this whole discussion of these Gemaras, and it goes on, there's other acronym that we're in. I'm only giving you a taste. This is one of the most confusing and difficult topics. So don't get upset if you're not feeling totally in control of the topic. You have to ask yourself, if it's absolutely usher to give a Nibble and Mace, even for good purposes such as advancing a medical science and becoming a good doctor, so how on earth do we justify going to an animal? And what do I do, this is going to happen to anyone in medicine, when you're asked as the intern or resident to get consent for an autopsy from that family? So what's our usual way out of this type of problem?
The body's not Jewish?
Right. So that's hand out number three. We're going to do hand out number three exceedingly quickly, because we have 2 minutes. Okay. When is the classification again? 10 to? Is that where we go to? 10 to, right? Okay. Can we go a little bit, just for a minute? Handout number three, because I'd really like to get on to different topics, is all about the chiluk between Jews and non-Jews. And I'll tell you, there's a machlokes Ramban and Rashi that's in the first 2 pages of the handout, where Rashi seems to say everything stemming from the psukim about burial. And Rashi will learn that burial only applies, the chiluk burial only applies to Jews, not to non-Jews. And the Gemara itself will ultimately say we have a Mishum Darke Shalom, to be nice, good people, and to keep peace, an obligation to bury non-Jews. But Mi'ikar Adin, we don't. And the upshot and the accepted psak, the Shulchan Aruch, is that there is no obligation of burial in a non-Jew other than Mishum Darke Shalom, which means to keep the peace. So therefore, that's the opening for the fact that this whole sugya, this whole topic of Kvura, Nivela Meis, all of that, it's very different between Jews and non-Jews. The only thing we have to be concerned with when it comes to non-Jews is going to be Darkei Shalom, which is very important, which means what? If according to them, it's totally acceptable to donate your body to science, and they don't have a problem with it, right? And they're comfortable with it, and they're comfortable with autopsies, there is no need to be concerned with being involved in that, which is the ultimate reason that we're allowed to have anatomy lab in America, right? Because most of the bodies are going to be not Jewish. You can rely on that. Where is this a problem, though? There is definitely a problem over there. I don't know how to deal with it. It's a major controversy, a major problem. But for us, it's far less. And it's also going to be in terms of getting consent for autopsy. So if you look, a lot of this handout, I wanted to go through the hashkafa. So we're going to skip in that because we're going to come back to this. Right? Should we be bothered by the fact that we treat non-Jewish dead bodies differently than Jewish ones? Is there anything not nice about that? So I always am concerned with that. So there's like 4 pages dedicated to that issue. We're going to come back to it when we do Pikul Fresh on Shabbos. So I'm going to skip it for now, but don't think I'm ignoring it. It is. You'll see what Rav Cook says, what Chasam Sofer says, a lot of statements that relate to this issue. So we're going to come back to it. In the meantime, I do want you to see on the last page of handout 3, the bottom line side of the Moshe is that you're allowed, based on the conclusion of this chiluk between non-Jews and Jews, so lamaisa, you're going to be asked to get consent for autopsy. I remember when I was first in this position, I was not up on this topic at all, and I thought there was no difference between Jews and non-Jews, and I was like hesitant to get involved in it when they asked me even if it was a non-Jewish family. And Rav Moshe is Mefurish, that it's okay. Right? If it's a non-Jewish family, you can ask the family to consent for autopsy. So lamaisa, you have that to rely on. Then he says, what about if it's a Jewish family? What should you do? So one thing is clear, you can't be involved in the autopsy without good reason. Good reason being saving of a life, right? So what does that mean? I want to give you some scenarios that would make a difference. Let's say there was experimental treatment done on somebody, whether it be surgical, medicinal, whatever the experimental treatment was, and the person died shortly after being involved in that protocol. How important is it to find out the cause of death? Very, very. It's absolutely essential to find out. You must know if your proposed treatment is killing people. So that's an absolute heter, l'chuli alma, to do that on Right? Anything like that, anything that involves an experimental treatment of any kind, you will be allowed to do the autopsy for the purpose of understanding what killed the patient to make sure it wasn't the treatment that you're about to give to 100 other people.
Heart experimental treatments is only done on large numbers of people, so you don't need to do an autopsy. If one person died, well, you can assume that he did it was from other causes. If multiple people
That's not true. That's not the, you'll see, medicine certainly does not work that way at all. That there's a, there are certain, let's say, idiosyncratic reactions, which means that not all humans react to things the same way, right? You're allergic to certain things, other people are allergic to other things, right? So that, that plays out in all areas of medicine. And you never make that kind of conclusion, you never try that. It has to be done in a much more scientific, statistically based fashion to make that conclusion. So for sure, in a typical experimental treatment where you don't know anything about what's going on, it will be something that they're going to look at in very significant detail. And the post-skin are okay in all those types of scenarios. So, again, bottom line is, if it's a Jewish family, you can't consent, you can't get them into the autopsy unless it's one of these good reasons. Are you, I remember thinking, am I chayev to try and stop them? So Rav Moshe here writes, this you should ask your local post-skin. He says no. You don't have to do that. He doesn't explain why. Right? You're not chayev to try to do. And what happens in real life? I remember when I was in this position, you're going to find yourself in this position, it gets very delicate. And you have to use your, clever to avoid being in this situation as much as possible. But if you're in a position where they're trying to get you to get consent for an autopsy on a Jewish patient, there is no heter to do it, unless it's the Kohen. It's the Kohen, which some people say takes on the elements of the Aveira that's taking place. All right, the last two handouts involve something that we can do very quickly. What we're going to do, I don't want to keep you here really later. We're going to stop. On Monday, we're going to just quickly do the other issue of Hanok. We're talking about Mr. Hanok. That's related to transplant. So we're going to get into organ transplantation. And then we're going to continue with you the other topics.
I finished the argument. Lab.